Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone.
Hi,
you want to have some fun?
Yeah, we want to have fun.
Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in storiesforchildrenmagazine.org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Follow me to the World of Ink.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the World of Ink Network, a featured network here on Blog Talk Radio. And today is the Stories for Children show. But before I jump into the show today, let me go over some of the upcoming shows we have here. So it looks like tomorrow is Marsha Casper Cook's show, A Good Story is a Good Story. She is doing a special show where you get to meet the host of our upcoming show called Today's Woman. It's a new show that is starting here on the World of Ink Network on Blog Talk Radio, and it will be on Saturdays. It's called Meet Today's Women. So you can join Marsha Casper Cook on A Good Story is a Good Story tomorrow, which is Tuesday, and it looks like that that will be at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And then we also have Cooking with Pam Hoffman and William Maltese on the World of Ink Network. So that is going to be a fun show. Marsha Casper Cook is hosting that. And that will be at 9 p.m. Eastern as well this week. And then, I don't see what date. And then Wednesday, we have our What a Success show usually earlier in the month. We usually do that the second Wednesday of the month, but we moved it to this coming Wednesday because obviously Sunday was the Oscars. So we are doing our special Academy Awards special, and we're going to be talking about who the winners are, who the losers are, who cried, who laughed, any oopses that happened during the 2015 Oscars, if we agree or don't agree with who won, why that was. We'll be talking a little bit about the fashion on the red carpet as well. So definitely join us at 9 p.m. Eastern Time here at the World of Ink Network this coming Wednesday for the Academy Awards special recap. And that will be with myself, Virginia S. Grenier, Marsha Casper Cook. And then we will also be joined by R.J. Jeffries, Melissa Kerr, Arnold Rudnick, Kelly Abel, and Joanna Lee Doster. So we have a huge group joining us, and it's going to be a fun show. And then we also have a new show coming up with Fran Lewis. It doesn't debut until March. It's called Let's Talk About Writing. So anybody who wants to get some tips on writing, learn just some inside information, definitely tune into that show. We'll be starting on March 19th will be the debut of that show. And that airs at, it's actually a pretty early show. That one is, it says 6 a.m. in the morning, but I think that might be incorrect because that's really early, but usually it's about 10 a.m. Eastern time is when Fran does her show. So that will be her newest show, Let's Talk About Writing, and that's what we have coming up here on the World of Ink Network. So today's show is a Stories for Children show, and I am joined by a fellow local author in my neck of the woods out in Utah, which is J.E. Thompson. I know him as John. And he has two books that he has written that fit in with middle grade to young adult kids. So welcome to the show, John. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Virginia. It's nice to be here.
And it's so weird doing the phone thing with you because I'm used to us being in person, and which we were just talking about, how you haven't seen me around lately in the writer's circle out here in Utah. So Here you are on my show, but I've had a couple of our fellow writers on, which I had told you about, Tom Garrison and David Smith in the past. So it's great having you on finally on the show to chit chat. So I would love for you to share a little bit about your background, because you've been in writing for a while, but you also have a teacher background, so you kind of encompass quite a few different things.
Even farther than that, my degrees are in psychology and communications, but I spent 20 years in public safety. And during that time, I was in charge of DARE officers in the schools, and so I had the opportunity to actually be teaching there. And then for 12 years, I was a Torah teacher, and we had a small congregation where we met on a weekly basis that I taught. And all of that kind of folded together into my writing style and my psychology of writing and the things I write about. And so when I get into things that I'm familiar with, like public safety or injuries, because I dealt with accidents and things like that, I'm kind of have firsthand experience of a lot of the stuff that I'm dealing with. And so I'm able to incorporate that into my writing. So it's kind of fun. It's almost like reliving some of the things that I've done in the past.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. And, of course, I always learn something new about one of my fellow writers out here. Like, I did not know that you had been in the public safety arena before, because that's what my husband does.
Yes. Yes, in fact,
so
when
I like,
first...
Oh, I had no idea.
In fact, I was in there when the system your husband works on first got adopted. We went from the old system into the new system, and so yeah, I was surprised to hear when you said your husband was in charge of that or worked in it.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So you've been writing for a while, and I loved in your bio, which we have up, which is so cute, that you talked about actually at age 14, you submitted your first short story, and even though it didn't win, you went through that first rejection of it. You know, it got submitted, so you're excited, and then it didn't win, so basically the rejection. But it didn't stop you from writing. So I think that's so cute that you have that in your bio, because, you know, that's one of the things that a lot of people ask writers at the beginning when they meet them is, well, when did you start writing? Or when did you know you wanted to be a writer? So back at 14 is when you got bit by that bug, huh?
Yes, indeed. I wrote the story for a class, and then my teacher came and said, wow, this is such a good story. I'm going to submit this to a district-wide competition, which was a surprise to me. But, mm-hmm. You know, being that age, I was really impressed and full of myself and everything else. And it got me notoriety among some of the other students that also liked to write. And then when it didn't win, it was one of those things, well, when it's submitted, I thought, well, you know, it's a shoe-in. And then it didn't win. And I went, mm-hmm. What happened? And the teacher explained to me that just because you submitted it doesn't mean it's going to win or be accepted or anything else. You just submit it and take your chances and you do the best you can. And so after going through, you know, fits of depression and that it didn't win, I realized that it doesn't matter. I like to write. And so I continued to write. Some of the things I submitted for publication, other the things I just wrote and enjoyed. Many of them turned into stories that I told to my kids at bedtime. And so it was just fun. And I enjoyed it. And then later on, I decided I ought to sit down and actually start writing something serious. I've written magazine articles and newspaper articles and shorter works. But mm-hmm. I accepted a challenge in 2003 for the NaNoWriMo, the November National Novel Writing Month. My next to the youngest daughter, she was going to do it. And so she kind of goaded me into it. And I says, okay, I'll do it with you. And I wrote 50,000 words in November, which is the goal. And, of course, it's also just a flash writing, and so everything needs to be edited and put back together. And that was a much longer process than just the writing it in a month. And that's where my first book, Revelation, came out of.
Did you do any prep work beforehand before you you did the whole NaNoWriMo thing, or no, did you just kind of sit down and start typing it out? Because I've heard authors do it either way, so I'm just wondering, which way did you go? Did you just sit down and just start typing every day and trying to have like a certain set of, you know, limit of how many pages or words you wanted to get done? Or did you actually do some prep work before you accepted the challenge?
I think it was long about October 23rd or 24th that she finally convinced me to do it. So by the 1st of November, I really had no preparation. I had no idea what the story was. I just sat down with a concept, and I thought, okay, where at that time we were living on the Oregon coast, and we lived about 8 miles south of one of the most frequent Bigfoot sighting areas in Oregon. And I thought, huh, Bigfoot, that would be an interesting topic. So that's basically the preparation work I did, is I thought, something to do with Bigfoot. And then from there, my goal was 1,600 words a day. And
wow.
It just kind of flowed out of that. And that's where it started, and just kept going through the month. And I knew that I had a goal every day of writing so many words. And as I went back and started editing after the month was over, and actually it was several years after that that I decided to go back and revisit it and turn it into a book. But I found that my daily writings really were disjointed. I had one idea this day, so I wrote about it. I had another idea that was completely unrelated this day, so I wrote about that. So out of that 50,000 words, I probably had 15,000 that were actually directly related to the story that eventually became my book, Revelation.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it makes me think, did you attend when Jack Remick came out to Southern Utah and did his one-day writer's workshop with us? I want to say, I think you were there, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I did, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and how he talks about, you know, you do the time writing, and he's like, and there's going to be a whole bunch of crap, but you'll find those few gold nuggets amongst it all.
That's exactly what I found.
So there you go.
Yeah. That's it. Where his is timed writing, mine was word count. So I just basically sat there and pumped out 1,600 words a day, and sometimes more, a little, sometimes less, but that was the goal. We figured it out on a monthly basis, and that's what we'd have to come up with. I think it was 1,666 words a day.
Oh, wow. So what did you, because I know you just ballparked, you're like, oh, it's probably about 15,000 words that I actually ended up using, you know, to start putting the book together. But when you're working on Revelation, what did you decide was the core theme of the book after sitting down and going through that process in November and going back, you know, later and looking at it and finding what you felt was, you know, a storyline to be had. What was the theme that grabbed you out of everything that you had written out of those 50,000 words?
Yeah, it was much later, and the theme that grabbed me was my 15-year-old girl soccer player, who was a star high school soccer player. Originally, the young man, Billy, was the main character. That's the way I had originally written it. But then as I went through it, I realized this really needs to be told from Michelle's point of view, because it's her that becomes intimately involved with the whole storyline. And so Billy all of a sudden got sidelined, and he became just an introductory character, and she became the main character. And as I went back through my writings, even though she wasn't involved in a lot of it in the original 50,000, I realized, okay, she needs to go through all of this, not him and not these other people. And so then as she became my main character, then I began to see a storyline where she goes through a whole change process through not only this book, but then the second book that's coming out in August, Retaliation. So this will be a trilogy when it's finished. But yeah, it was like I say, it was several years later that I went back and began to compile all this and realize, yeah, I had to put this into a book. But that's when I saw the continuity, though, and it was kind of there, but it was all different characters. But the storyline was kind of continuous, so I just melded it into her character.
Right. No, I hear you. So, tell us a little bit about, Revelation, and Miki, can you tell us a little bit about Retaliation, which I know comes out later this year, because I know you're in the process of working on that one. But what is the book about, and what are you hoping that your readership will take away as they read, you know, this book and go through the trilogy?
One of the things that I hope people realize is that the theory of evolution, which although a lot of people are saying it's not a theory, it's fact, it's really kind of silly when you think about it. Because I was just recently reading that they've been doing research on the E. coli bacteria. And the E. coli bacteria, in a matter of, they've been studying it for 30 years, and it's gone through 31,000 generations. And they haven't seen any kind of evolution in it at all. They've seen some adaptations. But the way people describe evolution working and how we all came from evolution, when you really sit down and think about it, it's kind of silly that we all came from rocks. So what my book deals with is this whole idea of evolution and how, in my book, I have creatures that are evolving from one generation to another, which if the two questions were, if things evolved into what they are today, why aren't they still? Why aren't we seeing new creatures that are evolving? And that's kind of the underlying thought behind this book, is that, you know, we should be seeing these things. We should be seeing things like Bigfoot, as whatever creatures evolve into humanoids, are continuing to evolve. Why should everything have just stopped? And it seemed like Oregon and the deep forests and the mystery within the forest and the darkness, and there's just so much that's unexplored and that people just don't go into very often, that would be the ideal breeding ground for things to evolve without human intervention.
Right. And Bigfoot, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and he's only one. Yeah. There are many other creatures that in my book that evolve into different forms, not humanoid forms, but squirrels that evolve into bigger squirrels with larger teeth and more prominent. And I have a doctor in there, Dr. Safine, who's an evolutionary ethnobiologist who studies these creatures and actually collects them, because once one of these new creatures has evolved, it's the only one of its kind. And chances are it would live out in its entire lifetime and die before it ever found a mate. So he's collecting them to preserve them because of their size, and they're more meaty. They're more available to predators. Predators prefer them over their less evolved relatives. And so he protects them and preserves them to try and preserve this new species that's come out.
Here's one for you, and because I know I haven't read your book. I know I've been to the different book events where you've had it there, and you know, heard you talk about it to people as they've come by and have talked to you. But I know when I was in science class, my sophomore science teacher, I think, wanted to throw me out because I focused on biology. I really thought I was going to become a biologist when I was older, until I realized you don't make much money doing it for a long time. So I changed my career path, but I loved biology. And I remember us talking about evolution, and my teacher about kicked me out of the class because I would not let up, because I'm starting thinking, like, if we evolved and, you know, we're supposed to come from monkeys and blah, 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 you know, going through the whole, you know, missing link down to, you know, we came from whatever monkey, I can't remember which monkey they said that we're supposed to come from. But I'm like, why didn't the other ones evolve with us? So I'm just curious, do you have any character that's like that in your book? Because I know I was definitely like that as a teen. Well, I'm like, you know, like you said, like, you know, essentially if we're supposed to come from rocks, why do we sell rocks? It's always
there you go, yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's the other two questions, is if we evolved from apes, why are there still apes?
Yeah.
And if apes evolved into humans, where are they? Why aren't they in it now? But no,
yeah.
there's no character in the first book, Revelation, that questions it. It's just kind of accepted. In fact, at first, Michelle, she really doubts this whole thing. She thinks her friend Billy is crazy. However, as she begins to see all these examples, and Dr. Safine explains all these things to her, she becomes accepting of it. And she thinks, well, sounds like what they teach in school. However, that's just the first book in the series. As we go through the series, I'm going to explore some other avenues that are going to change some of those ideas that she has and some of the things that she assumes are facts and some of the things that she's convinced of. So as we go through the book, she's going to come to some other realizations and experience some other things that's going to kind of alter her worldview.
Yeah, and I love that you're attacking a topic that is something, you know, that all of us, doesn't matter, you know, the second we all get into high school, every single person, you know, encounters this exact topic. I mean, we can all relate to it, you know, high school age, you know, adults, we can read your book and relate to it because we remember learning this in school. And I know there's people who 100% are behind it and back it. I'm watching that show, Orphan Black, and I know in that one of the clone characters is into the whole evolution. She's an evolutionist, and that's what she's studying in school, in the universities, and so forth. And every time a character comes on, my husband just has to be like, don't even start, because I'm always on the opposing side of that whole conversation. Because that's just me. I'm just devil advocate, I guess, on stuff. So I love the fact that you have a book like this that really gets people thinking, because that's one thing that, and there's some very entertaining literature out there, don't get me wrong, but I love when authors write books that really make you stop and think, not just your typical hero's journey or just your typical, you know, someone dealing with, you know, death or, you know, coming of age or, you know, just not the typical themes that are out there in literature, but one that really makes you stop and really think about your, what your beliefs are and your value system is and how you perceive life as a whole. And I love that this trilogy is going to do that for people.
One of the other things that Michelle begins to face in Revelation, but then it becomes more prevalent in Retaliation, is prejudice against people like her and her. Because there are certain factions of the all-human population that don't mind that there's these evolving creatures like Bigfoot out there, and then there's other people that think it's a travesty and they should be destroyed. And oddly enough, many of those people are within the government that we find out they've actually known about these creatures for generations and have kept them secret.
You know, I could.
So there's a little bit of conspiracy in there.
Yeah, I say I am definitely into conspiracy theories, and I would so see that. I could see that. Yes, I could totally see our government doing that. That is so believable for me. Yeah, you can.
Well, yeah, as a result of some of this.
Huh? Oh, go ahead.
Well, as a result of this, Michelle's parents are actually kidnapped by the Department of Homeland Security, and that comes into the story into play.
Wow, you've got some got a lot of little things going on in there. I'm definitely gonna have to pick up your book now. I should anyway, just because I know you. But I'm definitely gonna have to read it. You should see my stack. I think I have like 5 books stacked high of all of authors I'm friends with here in Utah that I need to read. I just got through Johnny Warden.
Revelation is coming out with a new cover on March 5th that'll be available.
Is that the one that you sent me?
Yes, that's the new cover.
Yes, okay.
That won't be available until March 5th.
Mikey Brooks, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, I love him. He is such a sweetie.
He's also a local personality.
Yes, he's.
And
he's
an author in his own right.
Yes, he is. He's up in the Salt Lake Valley area. And, you know, believe it or not, I had known him for quite a few years before I met him in person just last year in October. That was the first time I got to meet him, was in October of last year, face-to-face. We've had him on the show, too.
I was in a writer's group with him for over a year before I actually met him, and I also met him in October.
Amazing how our worlds are, isn't it? That we can go forever. Marcia and I have known each other for, 8 years, I think, now is what we're going on. Yeah, it has to be. And no, not 8 years, 7 years. We've known each other because I know right before I had my youngest, Sabrina, and she lives out in Chicago. She's my partner at the World of Ink, and we still have not met face to face. But we are planning on getting that rectified soon because it's been too long.
Isn't modern technology wonderful?
Oh, I know, isn't it? Well, let's talk about your next book, John, because you have your other book, which is Deliciously Dark Tales, which is a collection of 16 short stories. And I definitely like the dark. I love horror. I love campfire stories. I love macabre and paranormal and, you know, anything that's just kind of out of the ordinary. So let's talk about that, because I know that's kind of your thing, is anybody who likes it dark is supposed to like these stories. So let's talk about this, because I know, October, you were excited because the book was out and you were able to have it out when we had our big festival out here in Utah. So let's talk about that collection, because I didn't really get to – I was so busy, and I haven't – I'm finally where I'm winding down to only gear back up again, right? So I've never really gotten to hear about this collection that you have, your little anthology.
This is an interesting collection. They're definitely on the dark side, and they deal with some. A couple of them deal with some more mature subjects. So this probably isn't the kind of thing you're going to read to a under 14-year-old for a bedtime story. Some of them deal with some rather mature subjects, but they're clean. They're not dirty or erotic or anything like that. They just deal. One of them deals with abortion. One of them deals with spousal abuse. But they started out. Have you ever woke up in the morning and you can kind of remember a nightmare and it's kind of there and kind of gone, but it's just bizarre, and you just find yourself saying that was just bizarre.
Yes.
That's the way these started out. For whatever reason, for a little over 2 weeks, I would wake up in the morning and I would have these just bizarre, dark thoughts. And being the writerly kind of person that I am, I would lay there in the dark and I have just a keyboard. It's not a computer, it's just a keyboard. And I would just type these things out right as soon as I woke up. And then I compiled them and edited them and built them into stories rather than just the remnants of a dream that I had. And they became the Deliciously Dark Tales. And they originated in the dark recesses of my mind. And my wife slept on the far side of the bed for several weeks after she realized what I was doing. And thought, wow, you're just really weird. But this is a real change in direction from what I usually write. You don't usually write such dark things, but they just came to me, and I thought, you know, these are kind of fun. They're dark, definitely dark, but they're kind of fun. And I shared them with some other people and got some beta readers, and they said, yeah, these are kind of fun. They're definitely dark and definitely kind of terrifying, but they're kind of fun. I thought, I like dark and terrifying. Stephen King is one of my favorite writers. And so I thought, I'm going to put these together into an anthology and just put all of these dark tales together and put them in a book. And decided to name it Deliciously Dark Tales because I'm also a dark chocolate fan. The darker,
so
the better.
And I'm a Stephen King fan. I like that. That's great. Yeah. Well, is there any of the 16 that are your favorite? Because I mean, I know as authors, we of course cherish everything that we write. But I'm just curious. Do you have a favorite out of the 16 short stories?
I actually do. My favorite out of the 16 stories is The Good Wife, and that's the tale about spousal abuse. It's not direct spousal abuse, and you don't actually see the abuse taking place except for the time where the wife is fed up and kills her husband in a rather unusual way. But you kind of just see references to what she's been going through. They marry right actually in high school, and she was a victim of abuse prior to that time, and her husband was introduced to her by her abuser.
Oh.
And convinced to marry her. And they live in a home that's isolated. There are no neighbors that she can see. They moved into their home late at night one night. She has no idea who lives close by. She's basically a prisoner on the property because she can't walk far enough to get to somebody else's house. She doesn't even know where they are. And he goes off to work every day. And his excuse for most of what he does is, well, you know, it's for work. She goes, no, I don't know. I have no idea what you do. I have no idea where you go. And, of course, that brings retaliation. And it's a story of her turning the tables on her husband and her abuser.
Wow. So would you say that there's like a lesson to be learned in every single one of the dark tales?
Perhaps. Sometimes the lesson is, don't go to places like that.
don't accept
jobs that you don't know what they are.
You're making me think of that one commercial. I can't remember what insurance commercial, but where they're like running and they're like, why don't we get in the car that's running? They're like, no, let's hide behind the chainsaws. What?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I remember
that.
Yeah.
Why would you go in the creepy dark house or into the cemetery when you're running away from somebody?
Exactly. Or why would you take a job that causes you to go into a dark cemetery at night?
Yes, there you go. So do you have somebody
especially
who works
if you're not
like
a security guard.
Oh, you have a security guard.
Especially if you're not
a
security guard. Huh?
Ah.
Yes.
Sounds like they're fun. Are you planning on doing like a second one, like a Delicious Easy Dark Tales 2 or anything like that?
Not at this point, but if the dreams return, then probably. But these were not something that I sat down with the intention of, I think I'll write a book on dark tales. These were just things that came to me, and as I wrote them out and realized, wow, these are stories. Mm. And so they were just kind of impromptu to me.
Yeah.
Whereas
but
Revelation, I sat down with the intent to write a story. Mm. These just kind of came to me, and they just begged me to be written.
But, you know, I think that's fun sometimes, you know, for those who write because, you know, I was just watching an interview with R.L. Stine, and he was talking about how he hates outlining. And when in his earlier career, you know, his editor would make him revise his outlines like 3 to 5 times. His outlines would get even revisions. And so by the time he was done outlining, he was tired of outlining. He hated his book that he was writing because of it, and of course, he was talking about now he can't, you know, work without an outline. But you know, I'm sure, you know, when you get like you're talking about, you know, how these were like just, you know, bits and pieces of dreams that you remembered. I mean, when you get that kind of random inspiration where it's just pure creative writing, I mean, how fun is that? Because a lot of writing isn't that way.
You're right, and this one didn't have the tedium of outlining and plotting and everything else. These were just kind of flowed out and then later built into the story. But the heart of it was already there. And so I was just kind of massaging the heart of the story rather than trying to plot it out or outline it. I was just forming that heart of the story into a cogent and coherent tale. And that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Because I found
like
some
it.
Of these characters that I'm dealing with in here, because they're dark tales, some of the characters are not the kind of person you'd want to bring home to mom and dad. And it was kind of fun as I manipulated them that some of them kind of manipulated back.
You know, I've heard that, you know, where people like, the story just, my characters just kind of took off. They wouldn't do what I wanted them to do. And, you know, it's, I'm sure for the listeners are thinking, how can that be? I mean, as a reader, I remember sitting down as a reader when the first time I ever heard that come out of an author's mouth and started thinking, but they're your creation. How can they fight you? But I guess because they do have their personalities, and if you try and make them do something that goes against what their, you know, personality character structure is, it's like anybody who would try and do it to a real person, trying to make you go against who your natural human instincts are.
Yeah, I have one story in here called The Dowser. Do you remember the old, back in the old days, if somebody needed water, they would hire a dowser and they would come out and find out where the source of water is. Mm-hmm. They would douse in the fields.
Yes.
Well, my dowser douses for bodies and body parts rather than water. And originally, he was kind of a detective kind of guy, a private, I guess more of a private investigator really than a detective. But he was hired by the police department on several cases because they knew that there was a body someplace or they knew that something had happened. And so they brought him in to find it. And originally, he was just a consultant. But as I wrote through the story, I kind of realized that there was more to him, that he kind of had a dark secret dwelling down in his soul that I didn't know when I started. And that was really fun. Because it's not that he's a bad guy. He just has some dark secrets that the police don't know about and I didn't know about till toward the end of the story.
Wow. He was keeping them hidden from everybody.
Yes. Yes. And for good reason.
I believe it. Everybody has secrets, right? We all have to have secrets, and we don't always want people to know what they are.
Yeah. His are just a little more convoluted than many's.
You know, you have taught, and I know we were talking about before the show started, because you've done some teaching. I mean, I know you've done some speaking for the Heritage Writers Guild, which is the local writers chapter in Southern Utah. You've talked in other forums as well, and then you've also done some teaching. In being on kind of both sides of the table, as in, you know, author and then also helping people learn how to write, what have you found personally or noticed in talking to those who are trying to hone their writing skills has been probably, you see, as one of the most challenging things that those who want to become writers face?
I think one of the most challenging things that I have experienced with the classes that I've taught, and the classes that I taught mostly were beginning or getting started writing. For those people that always felt they wanted to write something or wanted to write a book, but just never either got around to starting or got around to finishing or weren't able to work through the process and just stopped. And so that was my favorite class. And what I found is that one of the things that stops most people is they'll pick up a writing book or they'll take a writing class, and the author or the instructor will tell them how they're supposed to do the process of writing. And while it may have worked for the instructor or the author, it may not be the way this individual who's trying to write or trying to learn to write may not work for them. And so one of the challenging things that I've found is having people discover for themselves what works for them. Now, of course, you can't throw out grammar and you can't throw out plot structure or any of the things that you have to have, but how you arrive at those positions, how you're able to put that together so that it actually comes into some form of cogent writing or eventually maybe even a book, a lot of that, people are different, and what works for one person doesn't work at all for another, and yet they find something that works for them. And what I try and do is help people discover their path, what works for them, because like where I was able to sit down and write 1,666 words a day, I found a lot of people, they can't set that kind of goal for themselves, but they can just sit down and I say, take an idea, try an idea and just try writing. And some people will really click with that. And they go, yeah, I can do that. And they'll still write as many words, but they have to have a different starting place. Their focus has to be someplace. And some people, well, they can't get past writing incomplete sentences. They have to write complete sentences. I say, fine. You know, if that's something that 3 sentences from now you're still going to be focused on that and you're still going to be worried about that, write in complete sentences. Other people, they can't write in a complete sentence and keep going. They just a word here and a word there and maybe 5 words strung together here. But it all comes out, and when they're finished, they have several pages that they can look at and go, okay, this is my story. Now I can flesh it out. And that works great for them. And so that's one of the biggest challenges is people that come into my class often think, well, you know, I had this writing instructor that says, this is the way you have to do this. And I said, if it doesn't work for you, forget it. Let's find out what works for you. And that I think that's the biggest challenge.
You're the first person I've ever heard actually say that.
Well, our school system tends to have a set structure. This is how you do this. You outline Roman numeral 1, A, B, C, D. And this is how you do this. You take this and you do this and you do that. And you see a lot of students that are just going, I don't get it. Or this is really confusing. Or I hate this. Don't do it.
Find out what works for you and
what you enjoy.
Yeah, I love that because I've had people that have, you know, as when doing the book festival have come up to me, especially, you know, this last year when we had we tied on the 1-day writing workshop as part of the St. George Book Festival, and they're like, well, it'd be nice to have, like, you know, some classes where they actually teach us the technique. And I'm sort of thinking, you know how many different types of techniques are out there? And if we taught you what Dr. Seuss's technique is, you're still not going to write like Dr. Seuss, okay? Only Dr. Seuss can write like Dr. Seuss.
Right.
You know, like only Stephen King can write like Stephen King. No one is, unless you have his brain in your head, you know, and I always laugh at that because you could teach technique, but just because you can show somebody how someone's technique is, to actually apply it, it's the application, I think, is a lot harder. I think that's, you know, I think you're right. And it's, like I said, you're the first one I've ever heard ever say that. It's why I think people do get frustrated because they're trying to apply techniques that, you know, and the other thing too, it's like you hear it, but just because you hear it, you're not seeing it in, you know, in where it's actually being done. So trying to visualize it is, I think, hard too without seeing it in, you know, an application form.
Right. It's not like skiing where a skier can watch somebody come down a slope and they can see where they bank and where they turn and where they, you know, how they lean, and they can determine the slope by that and the best way to go through the slope. And they can watch several people do that. With writing, that doesn't work. Doesn't help. You can take a book and that's the final product, but everything that went into that final product, all the processes behind it, are all peculiar to that author. Like you're saying, you know, you may be able to read what Stephen King wrote, but it doesn't mean you can write like he did, because there's a lot behind that that you don't see, that you don't understand, and you don't have his mind.
So for you, I'm just curious because, you know, every author has their own way of plotting and outline and stuff. What have you found to be what works for you? Are you just to sit down and just start typing at your computer? Do you have a loose outline? Are you like the posty person? Do you actually like color on your walls like Anne Rice? I don't know if you knew that, but she actually writes on her bedroom walls and then paints them over when she's done with the book. And that's probably the most unique one I've ever heard. Like my husband probably like thinks something happened to me that, you know, that I'd lost if I started writing on my walls in our bedroom. do you do like a complete detailed, you know, outline? I know people who their outlines are so detailed they can almost turn them into their synopsis. I'm just like, what have you found has kind of been, or do you tend to use different ones for different books?
I use different ones for different books. Like I mentioned with the Deliciously Dark Tales, that just kind of came to me, and I wrote them out. There was really no plot, no storyline. It just started with this thought, and as I typed there in the dark, I didn't even turn on the light. I just typed in the dark, and as I thought about it and typed, basically the whole story just came to me. And it required a lot of editing and rewriting and re-editing and rewriting, but the whole story just kind of flowed out of the dark recesses of my brain. With most of my other stuff, what I'll do is I'll figure out the chapter structure and what needs to happen. And oftentimes I will open a new document for each chapter, and as I'm working on the book, I will just begin to fill in those blank documents with thoughts about what has to happen. Or sometimes a blip of dialogue will come to me, and I'll just put that into that document for the chapter. And as I go through, it's basically an outline, but it's just kind of a shotgun outline. I know that in this chapter something has to happen, and so I'll just kind of go through and brainstorm what's going to cause it, what's going to be the result, who's involved, how's it going to happen, and I'll just type thoughts and ideas and sometimes dialogue, and then I'll do that as I get that, and as I get enough information in the chapter, then I begin to put it all together and write it. But I'll be writing a chapter, but I still have all my other documents for the other chapters, and something will occur to me that, oh, wait a minute, this is a great idea, where's it going to go? And I'll figure out which chapter it's going to go into, and then I'll just throw that in there and go back to actually writing. So it's kind of a combination of making an outline and doing the actual writing at the same time.
Gosh, who was I listening to that does that? I know her name's Margaret. I can't think of her last name, the author's last name. But she was talking about that. She was talking about kind of like, is it a barrage? Is that correct? Where you're kind of move forward and then you duck down and then like just like in the military, they fire over your head and then you get up and you move forward again and then you get ducked down, they fire over your head. That's kind of like a wave like that. I think isn't that called a barrage? Or am I wrong?
That sounds like a barrage. Sounds like an interesting analogy.
Yeah.
The whole idea of advance
and
take a defensive position.
And I can't think of her last name right now, but her name's Margaret. she's an author. That doesn't help anybody. But anyways, that's what she was talking about. That's how her writing is. And as you're talking, I'm like, it sounds very similar to what the analogy she uses for her type of writing, where you're writing and outlining at the same time, kind of thing. So you're laying the groundwork and then you're writing, and you're laying some more groundwork and then writing. So,
and I find that's true between books.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm involved in not only writing Retaliation, but I also have a private investigator book that I'm writing, and a nonfiction book that I'm writing. And I'll be writing on one and have an idea for one of the others. So then I pull up, and I do most of the stuff in computer. I don't like longhand writing out. And if an idea will strike me, and I'll just pull that document up, and I'll throw it in there and go back to whatever I'm working on.
That's good. Now, do you usually know how your books are going to end before you start them, or are your endings more they come to you as you're in the process?
They come to me more in the process. I kind of have a general idea of what has to happen toward the end, but oftentimes things happen during the writing of the rest of the book that either alters that or fleshes it out. So that by the time I get around to writing that, and sometimes I write that not toward the end of the writing of the book. I don't necessarily work on chapter one first and then chapter two.
Yeah.
Some days I'll just get the bug and I'll think, whoa, I want to work on chapter seven today because I've really got an idea, and I'll just start writing on chapter seven. So.
Yeah. I've come to the conclusion that writing is more like doing a mosaic. or even working on like a puzzle. Usually you put in like your corner pieces and then you fill it all in. As you find the piece.
Or like
it
a crossword
really
puzzle where you, or like a crossword puzzle where you go down the list and you go, okay, I know that answer, and so you write that answer in, but the rest of it's blank, you know, and that was maybe 35 across.
That's the one thing I've really have understood over all the years of doing these shows and being at writers' conferences and the last few years being working with the book festival and stuff is there isn't step one to step 50, and you don't go from in that order by any means in this world. You know, you fill it in as you go.
That's it.
Whatever you find first, is you make sure that peg gets put in its hole, and then you just worry about the other pegs as you come across them on the path.
Absolutely, because I think that's the way our minds work. Our minds are not necessarily very really logical step by step. Some people's are, and that's why I say everybody's different. Some people are very logical and step by step, and they go, "Well, I can't work on chapter 3. Chapter 1 isn't finished." Okay, if that works for you, go ahead. You know,
yeah.
But for me, I'm much more scattered. I'm more of a shotgun kind of guy. I work where it seems like I'm ready to work today. But I always work.
Yeah, and that's probably key too, to getting a book finished. You know, is making sure you are putting the time in, because it is. It's easy, you know, because you have to manage your own time. It's like you have somebody sitting there saying, "Must write, must write."
See, that would be a great thing, is you get like one of those little sound machines, but instead of giving the ocean every 20 minutes, it says, get back to writing. Write something. Sit down and write.
You know, they should come out with, you know, those Fitbits where it lets people know they need to get up and get moving around, you know, because they've been sitting too long or whatever. My husband, we got one of those for him. He has a Jawbone, actually, I think. Yeah, he has a Jawbone. It's what we got him for Christmas. And that thing, I kid you not, because he wears it when he sleeps, because you wear it when you sleep. All of a sudden, it's like when you put your phone on vibrate, you know how it makes that zzz sound?
Mm-hmm.
It will do that, like at midnight. If it doesn't think he's asleep yet. And I literally jump up like, what is that? Because it lets them know, like, okay, now you need to go to sleep so you can get enough rest. And I'm starting thinking, if they had something like that, if someone can invent something like that for authors, they would be, like, so rich. You know, we just had to wear this, like, little wrist thing that, like, let us know, right? Must get back to writing, must stop writing, must get up and get some circulation, get back to writing. That'd be awesome.
That's right.
Well, we are almost to the end of the show, John. See, it goes fast. I told you, it'll blow by. So what would you like to leave with our listeners today, and where can they follow you, find your books?
My books are both available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and other online retailers. They can also find them in the St. George area at the Little Professor Bookstore, and also Stuckey's Family Pharmacy in Washington. I have a blog that I maintain, johnthompsonauthor.blogspot.com, and also on Facebook at jethompson-author.
Okay. That's all simple. And just so anybody knows, because John had like drilled this into my head when I first met him, it's J-O-N, there's no H.
Yes, that's true.
Because I always think of the traditional with the H spelling, so I thought I'd better put that in there really quickly before someone.
I had to be, thank you. I had to be different, but I forget that I am different.
You know,
I think
what?
I've
met more Johns now without the H than with the H now.
I started a trend.
You did. You started a trend. But it's been great having you on the show, and I do definitely look forward to when we all can get back together here in Southern Utah and hang out, because I do. I miss everybody. I know we all stay connected through the internet and being on Facebook and stuff, but I have missed being with the group. So anyways, but thank you
for
coming
you,
on the
Virginia.
Show.
Thank
it's,
you,
Virginia.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Yes. All right. And you enjoy the rest of the day and our lovely cold weather we have, because I didn't tell our listeners, but we actually got snow here. We haven't had snow until today.
There is snow in Southern Utah.
Yes,
is indeed.
It finally snowed. All right, well, you enjoy the rest of the day, and I will see you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Virginia.
Welcome. Bye. And then just so our listeners know really quickly of our shows that we have coming up again, we have tomorrow A Good Story is a Good Story with Marcia Casper Cook. She, oh my gosh, let me get back to it. That show will be at, I'm on the wrong page, will be at 9 p.m. Eastern time here on the World of Ink Network on Blog Talk Radio. And actually, that one is the Cooking with Pam Hoffman and William Maltese, now that I have my information right. It was last Tuesday was the special World of Ink where you got to meet Today's Women, which is the new show, Meet Today's Women, on the World of Ink Network that Marcia Casper Cook hosted. That is our actual featured show, so you can find that on blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network and listen to that as a podcast. Of course, any of our other shows are that way too, but that is the featured show. But tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern time, Good Story is a Good Story, Marcia Casper Cook, Cooking with Pam Hoffman and William Maltese. Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern time, is the What is Success Special Academy Awards show here on the World of Ink Network. We're going to be talking about the winners. Marcia Casper Cook and myself will be joined by R.J. Jeffries, Melissa Kerr, Arnold Rudnick, Kelly Abell, and Jonah Lee Doster, so definitely tune into that show Wednesday. And then we will, in March, have Fran's new show, Let's Talk About Writing, that debuts March 19th, and that will, and that time's been changed, so, no, it's still saying 6 a.m. Eastern, but I don't think that's correct, so we'll get that corrected in the system. And, of course, you can always learn more about us at worldofinknetwork.com. where we have all our blog talk shows, you can listen to as podcasts, our virtual tours, you can see what authors we have touring with us, you can see books from guests who have been on our shows to authors who have done virtual tours, and then, of course, if you ever have any questions, you can always contact us there at worldofinknetwork.com for shows or just writing advice. And we thank everybody for listening to us, and to have a safe week. Bye-bye.
Me to the World of Ink.